Assalamu alaikum, peace be with you, and welcome to Islam and Life with me, Tariq Ramadan, broadcasting from London. In today's show, we ask the question, what role women have played in the Islamic awakening of the Arab region?
Not only have women stood shoulder to shoulder with men on the streets of the Arab cities, demanding an end to corrupt and dictator governments, these women have actually been catalysts of change. Encouraging their husbands and sons to speak out against tyranny, these Arab women know better than anyone else where their true rights lie, within a truly Islamic environment. And this awakening is not limited to the Arab land, as women around the world have been staging protests and vocally speaking out in support of the Arab Islamic revolution. So, can the success of revolt against injustice in the Arab world be credited to the courage of women? Today, Islam and Life will investigate what role women have played in the Islamic awakening of the Arab region.
It's an important question. When we see what is happening and what happened in Tunisia, in Egypt, but also, of course, in Yemen, in Bahrain, in Syria, in many, many, many Muslim majority countries, it's quite clear that as the people were acting as Muslim citizens and they were asking for more justice, more democratic processes, no corruption, the end of dictatorships, women were very much involved in all these countries. We saw them very active in Tunisia, in Egypt, in Yemen, very much so in Bahrain, talking and speaking out and asking the government to step down and to be very involved in the claims coming from the people. And at the same time, being clearly Muslim believers and women with headscarf, with practicing Muslims, and saying quite clearly that all the claims that they had were not against Islam, but as Muslim women, they were acting for more democracy, more transparency, and more freedom and dignity. So these are the questions, and we have to ask this question for now and for the future, because the perception from outside is that the women are not very much involved in the civil society and politics, but more importantly for the Muslim majority countries themselves, it's quite important to ask ourselves what is the role of women for now and for the future. Well, to answer all these questions, I'm joined by Khola Hassan, director of Albatros Consultancy, an organization for Muslim women, especially human rights, forced marriages, education and Islamic law. Thank you for being with us today. As I was saying in my introduction, and after having watched the clip, it's quite clear that the women in the Muslim majorities in North Africa and in the Middle East played a very important role. So would you tell us, how do you see this? Is it true that they were very, very instrumental in helping this to be successful? Or still, we don't know if it's going to be successful, at least for the time being. There are things that are happening that are very positive in the way towards transparency, no corruption, and more democracy.
Oh, definitely. I think it's very true. The women have been at the forefront. They've been very loud. They've been very clear about what they want. There's no sense of the women, they need to stay behind closed doors, cover up, shut up, stay inside and do the laundry. They've been right at the front. I think I read that in Egypt, the reason for the first demonstrations in Tahrir Square were after four men had set themselves on fire as well, and a young woman produced a very impassioned, very forceful video, which she put on YouTube, asking the people of Cairo to come out and not to allow the deaths of those four men to go unremembered. And people did, and they did come out in Tahrir Square, and they did not come out just as men. It was amazing that the men were there with their wives, with their children. The women were there, not just walking and marching, but pushing buggies and carrying babies. And then as the whole, you know, demonstration carried on for weeks and weeks, the women were there. They were bringing blankets at night, they were bringing tents, they were bringing food, they were bringing medicines, they were bringing bandages, they were helping to build the stage on which the speakers were standing, and they were shouting, they were speaking, they were rallying the crowds, they were singing. They have been at the forefront.
So let me, what do you think of that? Because how could you explain this, the perception even from within, by the way. It's not only a Western perception of the Muslim majority countries. You know, having been in Egypt, in Tunisia, and visiting other countries in the Arab world, it's quite clear that the role of women when it comes to the public sphere, when it comes to social presence and political participation, it's quite clear that it's difficult. While I have been saying for years and witnessing that in education it's becoming much better, that we have now women much more involved in education, that they are more educated, even sometimes more than men in many, and all the surveys are showing that they are doing much better than men in many, many fields. But how would you explain this? Why in such a very sensitive time, when we are speaking not about reforms but revolutions, when we are speaking about facing dictators and tyrants and very, very tough autocratic regimes, they were at the forefront and moving ahead?
I think, number one, it shows how strong women are, even women who are within the confines of the home. A lot of women, for example, who came in countries like Tunisia were farming women who worked on farms, on the land, not used to being in big cities in front of rulers and speaking out. But women are very resilient. To have a child and to bring up a child and to cope with a system is not very easy for a woman when she's told to stay quiet. But it shows that, number one, women are not quiet. That even if they are within the home, they're wearing the trousers in the home. So that was the first thing, that it showed that women are not quiet and subservient and sitting quietly in the house. And secondly, that women have a very strong sense of justice, that they felt that what is happening. I just mean they have a strong sense of justice. I'm not going to compete with men in that. They just have it. Again, that it's not less than men.
This is your point.
And again, they don't sit there thinking, oh, never mind, let the men suffer out there. There is something wrong in our country. We need to get rid of tyranny. We need to get rid of these dictators who steal from us. Our countries, Muslim countries, that's what they're thinking, are producing wealth. People are working, producing wealth, and that wealth is being siphoned off into the pockets of these autocrats, these thieves. And we've had enough. In the voting process, women sometimes are not allowed to vote. When they are allowed to vote, there are no women that they can see who will stand for power and be able to speak on their behalf. So that sense of justice, which is a very Islamic sense, obviously, the Quran tells us to stand up for truth and justice. They realized this was not a time to stay silent, and that this was very much that everybody is suffering in society. High unemployment, high food and energy prices, the clampdown on unions, the autocracy of the government, all these things, the lack of accountability of government, which is very important. All that, these are issues affecting men and women, and the women wanted to be there. I thought it was amazing.
Yes.
And maybe they gave each other strength as well, that if the girl next door and the woman next door and the woman opposite who wears a niqab is going, why can't I? So I think it was also very much they gave each other support. So there was no sense of, oh, there's only one woman in that march. No, there's 2,000 women in that march. I can go as well.
So let me, before speaking about the perception from outside or for abroad, if we come from within the Muslim majority countries and the Muslim, the happenings that we had and people speaking as citizens but also as Muslims and saying, for example, in Egypt we are Coptic citizens or Muslim citizens, at the end of the day we are all together, and men and women were together as well. The way you are talking about it as a practicing Muslim, a believer, it's very positive that you think it's what the right thing to do, because you have the Quran saying in Allah ya'muru bil adl, God commands justice, so we have to go, men and women, all together. It's our common objective. Now, at the same time, while you are saying this, what we heard from the establishment in some countries, religious establishment in Bahrain, in Egypt, less in Syria, but in Yemen, where we had this discussion, is, oh, no, it's not Islamic.
Yes.
Women should not be involved in this because it's not of your business that there's to go back home. So it was a way to use women to promote a counter-revolution, revolutionary process. What is your take on this? Because still, you are saying that Islam, and I think so, Islam is pushing men and women to resist oppression and to promote justice, while we have establishment in Muslim majority countries saying exactly the opposite, that this is why we know it's not Islamic, because women are too much instrumental in the whole process?
Well, I think the problem is that throughout Islamic history, unfortunately, from fairly early on in Islamic history, women have been used to suppress. Women have been suppressed, and women have been used to suppress society. Women are always used as the instrument of whatever. If you want goodness in society, control your women. If you want piety in society, lock them up. If you want decency in society, cover your women. It's always women, women, women. And it's irritating because women and men are half each of society. Yes. So unfortunately, women are often used as pawns. And when governments are scared, and I know the Yemeni government, who's never had any interest in law, says, you know, the president immediately came out and said, haram, haram for women to be out in these public places, etc., using Islam or a version of Islam that suits them when they want it and discarding when they don't. So it's using. There's nothing honest in this discussion. And certainly these people are not interested in worrying about the piety or, you know, the
decency. When it comes from religious establishments, religious institutions, would you say they are not interested? Or are you saying, which in fact it's a sad story, but we saw this in many countries, the religious institution at one point supporting the government because they are under the authority of the dictator. So we saw this, and then using this against women at the same time.
I think, you know, that's a sad thing, that the ordinary men and women on the streets knew that justice is important. You know, justice is one of the names of Allah Almighty. That He is just, and the Day of Judgment is all about justice. So justice is very important in Islam. It's the, you know, it's the framework of society. And they realize they're not getting justice, so they came out in support of it. And it's really sad that our religious institutions were not able to see that. They were able to just see maybe what was suitable for themselves. And the other thing is that you will always get within religious institutions both sides of the coin, one saying, control those women, don't let them. There is this fear, I suppose, that the minute women start becoming vocal and are out there speaking, there's this worry that immediately fitna, this obsession with this word fitna, you know.
Troubles
and difficulty.
They are going to change the very essence of our culture and religion.
Yes, and there's always this fear that the minute a woman stands out, she's therefore going to become like these half-dressed models from America. And they don't realize that often these women who are standing out for their rights are standing for their rights as Muslim women and want to keep that identity.
Yes, and this is quite clear with the images that we just watched.
And
yes, exactly. And very practicing Muslim women with headscarf or without headscarf, but still claiming that are resisting oppression and asking for more justice. One point which is, I think it's important, and I would like to ask you what would be your advice to women in this, because something which is important in all this uprising is that they were non-violent, they were pacifist, and they were not against the West. At the end of the day, it was to free our country more than anything else. This is what they were claiming from the respective countries that we were talking about. If now you look at what is happening, and we know how much it's difficult in Syria, and now even the, you know, the governments in many countries, they are ready to kill their own citizens, and we know what is happening also in Bahrain, and asking the woman, you can't do this. We heard this in many, too many Muslim-majority countries. But the driving force to a non-violent crossing the board mass movement should rely also on the presence of women, because they can do what men cannot do in some circumstances. So what would you advise? How do you see this happening? What should be the priority steps and vision for women within these societies, knowing all the sensitive issues that we are talking about?
Well, there are a lot of issues, and each country has got its own issues.
That's true, yeah.
I think the first thing I would say is that if we remember Sumayya, the first person who died for Islam was not a man, it was a woman.
Yeah, she was a person.
She was the first shahid. So, you know, Islam from its very first day has had to rely on martyrs, on people who have died for the cause. And when you believe that, and it's very easy, I know it's awful for someone like me sitting comfortably in Britain without any of these issues to say this, but when you die for a good cause, you have not died in vain. And to
so
even,
the meaning of sacrifice is something which is important.
And they know it. They know that they have seen people all around them dying. A lot of the women who have been at the forefront of the demonstrations have been there because their husbands, their fathers, their brothers, the men of the family have not just been arrested and tortured, but have sometimes disappeared, haven't been seen for weeks, months, years. So there is this sense of, we've already made that sacrifice. We've lost so many members of our family. We've seen our children being killed. If we are another sacrifice, it doesn't matter if at the end of all the sacrifice something good comes. And given that they've come so far, to step down now, you know, would be very sad. This is the time to keep going with the momentum. The whole world opinion is supporting these people. And this is a human rights issue. It's not an Islamic issue. It's about human rights. It's about justice. It's about the right of citizens to be safe in their own countries. So, you know.
So don't give up.
Yes, go ahead and give the men the support they need. Because we all get support from each other. The whole in a family, the husband and wife support each other. It's not one supports the other. And it's the same thing in these. It would be so much easier for the men if the women are there with them.
So this is an important point, and I think that from an Islamic viewpoint, to be able that there is nothing wrong from an Islamic viewpoint, quite the opposite, is that if we refer to the Islamic principles, this is where the woman should be and in which way they have to be involved. And it's not new, by the way. The Islamic history is just full of women giving their life and knowing the meaning of sacrifice. For the name of justice, dignity, and freedom. So I think that this is the very important understanding, as you said. Now, still, if you think about what is happening in Muslim-majority countries, in Tunisia and in Egypt, do you get a sense that maybe through all this process, the revolutions, it might be that the situation of women, in the light of what is betrayed in and the discriminatory situation for many women in the in schooling, in education, in public life, in marriage, for example, there are lots of still too much discrimination. Do you see that following the revolution, something positive could come out of it, and what should be once again here on that side, something that should be one of the priorities for the women?
Oh, definitely. I mean, I think it's very clear that the women have not started out thinking that this is a gender issue. In none of the Muslim countries where all these revolutions are taking place has gender been an issue, that women are fighting for their rights. It's very much a human right for all, everybody. But yes, definitely, as with Britain, if you just think about the suffragette movement or before that, you know, the British fought against landowners and tyranny and despotism, etc. And out of that evolved the suffragette movement and women asking for their rights. So I think that will be a natural process, that once human beings in their own countries feel they have the ability to ask for rights and to demand rights and to be allowed to have rights, then naturally the next one will be women saying, well, we've got certain issues that we have been discriminated against. And I'm really, really hopeful that, for example, in government, where it's always been very male-centered, the governments in all these countries, that there will be space for women in elections to be able to not just vote, but stand for elections.
Yes, that's for sure now in Tunisia, where they are talking about, you know, having half and half, 50%, it's not sure that in the other country is going to happen.
Well, in Egypt, there's a woman standing for election. And she's just...
We need to be very cautious with symbols. Sometimes there is one woman, it's more a symbol than the reality. So this is why, for example, the follow-up to anything which has to do with the revolutionary process is also for women who were involved and very instrumental to get rid of dictators. Not to give up, but also on that side. And this is where I think the victim mentality that we might sometimes have with women saying, oh, you know, it's always the same as Muslims. We are Muslims. Women, we are discriminated. How could we change this mindset? Because the way you are talking is very, you know, pushy. This is what we have to do. Don't give up. But still, do you see signs that something could really change in the Muslim women mindset?
Yeah, I think being a product of Britain, I'm naturally like that because I've been given that opportunity here. But I know when I go back to Muslim countries that I see women much more. It's good to be humble, nothing wrong with being humble. It's good to be quiet, nothing wrong with that. But sometimes you have to speak out. Generally, as Muslims, men and women, we're told to be humble and to control ourselves. But sometimes, especially when it comes to injustice, we have to speak out. And I think there's already, especially as you said yourself, that in education, we're seeing so many more women throughout the Muslim world. And that is always the best way to get women forward, education, because with education comes.
So you would push them to educate themselves more. What else? What would you the first steps to just to have this finished and achieved revolutions reaching the objectives?
But also to stay within Islamic guidelines. I think, you know, you always get a religious backlash, because I think in many of these countries, some of the religious establishment will use this to say, see, you've given women the opportunity to go out and look at them now. They're on the streets, they're not at home, etc., etc. So they will use that to say, destroying our society, family, institutions are all going to be destroyed. So we need women to show that just because they have become articulate and educated and career-minded does not mean that they have abandoned the family, which is the most important.
Yeah, so more freedom doesn't mean less Islam.
Exactly.
This is the point which is so important.
And this is something that men seem to worry about, not women. Women don't seem to think that if I have freedom, I will become un-Islamic.
Yes.
I will be out partying all night.
That's completely
true. But for some reason, men worry about that, and I don't know why.
Because I think that there is a question of the status of men within the society. There is something which has to do with colonization, the perception that the women were targeted.
Yes.
And what if a woman, in the name of her freedom, is saying, let me alone, I can decide if I want to pray, not to pray, to dress the way I want to dress. Do you think that we have to face these consequences?
Definitely. But I think over countries like Egypt, for example, which has a very high rate of literacy among women, the hijab has made a huge comeback. There was a time, Nawal Sadawi, that sort of era, where women were showing their freedom by taking off their hijab. They're putting it back on, the next generation.
Yeah.
The mothers took it off, the daughters are putting it back on. So, you know, we need not worry about that, I think.
We need to protect the freedom of every single woman to decide.
And also,
what
if
wants.
A woman says, I don't want to pray, this is pure Islam. The Quran says no compulsion in religion. You cannot force anybody. You pray that they will come to it themselves.
Thank you so much. I think that during this discussion, which is an important point, is that's true if we look at what happened in the Muslim majority countries, in Tunisia, in Egypt, but also in Yemen, in Bahrain, in all the region, in the Arab, the Middle East, and the North African countries, women were very instrumental, very much at the forefront of for asking for their freedom, for the dignity for all. And as you were saying, which is very important, it was not women against men, and it was men, women less than men. It was men and women together in the name of freedom. But as you also said, which is very important, is not to give up. It's a long process. There are unfinished revolutions, and still the women should be involved, and should be involved from within to ask for more freedom and dignity. And men should maybe be less worried about the fact that more freedom doesn't mean less Islam, and that the women are showing that they are now becoming more educated, much more involved in the society, in the public sphere, in the social field, in the political arenas, and that they are proving that they can be very instrumental for anything which has to do with freedom and dignity, and at the same time reforming the societies for the better. It means that after the revolutions, there is still a long way to go to get women's rights being respected in the name of Islam, within the realm of Islam, and then to let the women decide what they want to be and how they want to live, and still to be full of confidence. And you repeated this at the end of the day. They can decide, and they can come back to the Islamic reference or not, but still Islam in their heart is a strong reference, and this is for the women to decide. But as you said, never give up and to carry on this struggle for dignity and freedom. Well, that's all we have time for. Please let us know your thoughts and views on any of the shows you have seen, and here is the way to contact us.
We'd like to hear your views on today's show, as well as ideas for future programs. You can do this by emailing us at islamandlife@presstv.co.uk. You can also join our Facebook page by searching Islam and Life on Press TV, where you can view past programs, keep up to date on future shows, leave comments, and meet other Islam and Life fans.
Finally, I would like to thank my guest, Hola Hassan. Thank you so much for your energy and pushing the women to be involved in this revolution and this struggle for freedom. And I hope to see you next week, inshallah.